will take a short break. Oh, I'm sorry, it's not Davis versus State, and it is Clark versus First National Bank of Omaha. My apologies. Mr. Denniger, good morning to you. Now let's wait and give everybody a chance to get in and out of the court. You can. You don't have to go back to the table.
May proceed.
May please the court. Hilda Graham was an elderly lady that was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer and was planning her estate. She had about 9 certificates of deposit with the First National Bank, and she would frequently make a change in who the beneficiary would be. The only real issue in this case is whether she changed the beneficiary from Linda Clark to Greg Graham. Before I get to that, I just take a minute on jurisdiction. The defendants asked for a summary judgment on jurisdiction and cited the fact that the motion for a new trial was overruled after the notice of appeal was filed. And we had that in the Court of Appeals, and they overruled it. And the reason they overruled it was, and you can check the arguments and the affidavits, what happened was we filed our motion, and we went to set it for trial. And the judge would not set it for trial. She said it was incorrect, wasn't available because there had been a motion for summary judgment, and we couldn't get a trial date, which effectively told us that our motion was overruled. And we didn't waste any time. We effectively paid our $200 and filed our notice of appeal, and I even bothered to send a letter to the judge saying, okay, she wouldn't hear our case.
Counsel, you're relying on what the court's bailiff told you about the status of the motion?
Yes,
That's what you're characterizing as the announcement of a decision, the language of the statute.
My paralegal always would arrange.
Does that announcement that you rely on appear anywhere in our record, either in the Bill of Exceptions or in the transcript of the filings in the court?
What I did was prepare a affidavit as to exactly what happened.
But that's at this level. I'm asking in the trial court's record that we receive, either in the Bill of Exceptions or in the...
No, it didn't appear.
It doesn't appear.
No.
That announcement doesn't appear in that record.
Right. Like most of the things in a summary judgment, it was my affidavit that relying upon what the
thank you.
Okay, now, here's what happened insofar as the change of beneficiary. August 6th of 2013, Hilda Graham called the First National Bank and said that she wanted Linda Clark removed as the death beneficiary, and she wanted the new certificate to show Greg Graham as a payable on death beneficiary. There's really no question about that. The manager of the bank took the call, Naomi Kramer, and she made a note, and she put the certificate number on, said Greg Graham, POD, Linda Clark. card was removed. And then she went to the bank's computer and printed out a new account agreement that showed that Greg Graham was going to be the new beneficiary and that Linda Clark was removed. She took the new account agreement and she put it in an envelope and she put a returned envelope, an envelope to mail it back to the bank in there, and she wrote her name on the return envelope so it would be sent to her instead of someone else. And she mailed it to Hilda Graham. That was August 6th. August 10th, she was working in the area of the vault, and she, in the mail receptacle, she saw this envelope that she had her name on, and immediately she thought that Hilda Graham had promptly sent it back. So she took it, she opened it, and looked at it, and in it was the new account agreement that she had sent to Hilda, and it was signed by Hilda. And she'd seen Hilda's signature many times, but she didn't send it to signature expert. She knew that that was Hilda Graham's return of the account agreement. And from that day on, the bank was obligated to honor that account agreement. That was an agreement with the bank, and the bank's procedures as to how they do it are really, we don't know. We know that they're supposed to scan it into their system and so forth.
Is the bank supposed to make a change to the agreement before they get the signature of the account owner?
I'm sorry, Judge.
Is the bank supposed to make a change to the agreement before they get the signature of the account owner? Were you able to hear that?
The account agreement printed out is the regular account agreement exactly as the bank wants it. And it was signed, delivered to the bank on August 10th, and the bank doesn't make any changes ever. Okay, now deposition, Naomi Craven is the bank manager, and she handled this, and they took her deposition. And it, over a half a dozen times in her deposition, she said, yes, I came back. I saw the signature. Hilda Graham had signed the new account agreement. And that's the evidence in the case.
Does the bank have the signed agreement?
Yes, they say they lost it. And that may be the case because it was in one area of the bank and it was supposed to have been scanned into their system, but it never was.
But so what's the effect of the lost signature card? Does it have any effect?
Yeah, I mentioned in my brief that you can prove a lost instrument by showing its terms and its execution and the details of it, which are obvious in this case, because the bank drew the instrument. And she signed it. So the fact that it's lost is an inconvenience more than anything. So I'm going to have to finish. Anyway, my opinion is, and I think it's accurate, is that the trial judge never read the depositions, that over and over said that the bank had the new signed account agreement back. And here's what the judge said. Said there is no evidence that Hilda gave a signed written notice to First National Bank to alter the rights at death on the certificate of deposit. In the face of two depositions of the bank manager, which I would consider an admission by the bank that they had the new account agreement back, They say, the judge says there is no evidence. I mean, I can't imagine why the judge would say that. And then that was on page 9. And on page 8, the judge said, again, there is no evidence that the account was changed in accordance with state law. And here's what state law says. The type of account may be altered by written notice given by a party to the financial institution to change the type of account. The notice must be signed by a party and received by the financial institution during the party's lifetime. It had to be signed and received.
What evidence do you have that this account was changed? Do you have
the testimony of the bank officer?
Yes, as a matter of fact, in the bank's response, they said that it was paid to Greg Graham because their business records showed that he was a payable on debt beneficiary. Yeah, so they paid it to him.
Yeah, but what about the letter that was supposedly found from the deceased to changing her certificate of deposit to Linda? What evidence do you have that there was a notice given to the bank to change the beneficiary of the certificate of deposit?
The testimony of the bank manager, primarily.
And that was based upon the letter that the bank manager saw?
That was the letter that she swore was returned to the bank a half a dozen times during her. And one other thing that I'd like to point out, we don't have to prove that the bank did get that, because this is a summary judgment matter. The only thing we have to prove is that there's an issue as to whether, frankly, I think it should be ruled on as a matter of law, because the bank manager drafted the instrument, mailed it to her, got it back, recognized it, saw her signature. I don't know how much further you can offer for proof on that kind of a thing. And the bank changed her records. So we feel that the judge just didn't read the depositions, I'm not sure. But in any event, there's tons of evidence that they got it back. They should have changed it. They did change their records. They paid it as they were obligated to do under the law, because the owner of the money had directed them to put Greg Graham's name on that account as the payable on death beneficiary.
Thank you very much. Ms. Spahn, good morning to you.
Good morning, Mr. Chief Justice.
And you all have 10 minutes. How are you going to divide your time?
Well, we're going to divide five. We're dividing and conquering. I'm going to handle the jurisdiction and the allegations that we didn't properly bring him in as a third-party defendant. And then I'll yield as much time as I can to Mr. Hasenjaker to respond to defend the order against the bank.
Okay, so you're going to take 5 minutes?
Yes.
Okay. You may proceed.
Thank you very much. Good morning. I'm here on behalf of First National Bank of Omaha, who had a CD owned by Hilda Graham, in response to the motion for summary judgment order that was entered, where the district court granted Linda Clark's motion for summary judgment, holding that the CD should have been paid to Linda Clark. The court also granted our motion for summary judgment that Greg Graham needed to pay the bank back so that then we could pay the proceeds out to Linda Clark. In response to that order being entered, Greg Graham filed a motion for a new trial to amend judgment of summary judgment order.
Before you talk about, did I interrupt someone? Before you talk about the motion, did the order on those cross motions for summary judgment resolve every issue in the case?
Yes, it did.
Leave anything at all?
No.
Okay.
No, because we need to pay Linda Graham, and then Greg Graham needs to pay us back. It's almost like it was an interpleader where we're stuck in the middle of the true parties. The true parties are who should receive the CD, and we were the conduit. The responsive pleading that Mr. Denningberg filed on behalf of Gray Graham was called a motion for a new trial to amend judgment of summary judgment order. And the prayer for relief is to amend the judgment. That's a motion to alter or amend, and that tolls the running of the 30-day clock under 25-19-12.
It terminates the running.
Thank you. You're right. It doesn't just toll it. It terminates it. Because when the order gets entered denying that, then the 30-day starts again. And the problem is when you read through 25-19-12, not only do you have a termination of the 30-day clock, then what happened is Mr. Denningberg, on behalf of Gray Graham, filed a notice of appeal. After that, the court entered the order denying his motion to amend the judgment. And unfortunately, there was not another notice of appeal filed, which needed to be filed for this court to have jurisdiction over this matter.
Opposing counsel argues that there was an announcement of the decision on the motion for new trial or to alter or amend the judgment. And if there was an announcement before he filed his notice of appeal, the statute would spring that notice of appeal as of the date of the entry of the order denying the motion, correct?
Well, correct, but if the timeline goes, he filed his notice of appeal before that announcement was made. So even if you follow that part, it still wouldn't apply.
What was the announcement, in your view?
I don't think there was one. I don't think a phone call from a judge's bailiff is an announcement. My understanding of an announcement is a lot of times we're before the judge, and the judge says, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to deny your motion and submit me an order.
So you would concede that an oral pronouncement on the record or an oral announcement on the record would qualify as an announcement?
Yes.
And you would also concede, that a docket entry made, perhaps contemporaneously with a phone call, the docket entry in the record, would also constitute an announcement?
That's a hypothetical. I would have a hard time conceding that.
Well,
because we weren't there to hear it, and we didn't have an opportunity to be heard. So I don't know if a journal entry based upon the phone call, when all parties aren't involved, would be an announcement.
But
if that happened, I don't think that happened.
I'm not suggesting it did.
Okay.
I'm trying to drill down to the record that's before us from the trial court doesn't contain any announcement, does it, until the date the judge entered the order?
No, it doesn't. And even if you follow through with everything that's been said by opposing counsel, the announcement was made after the notice of appeal. No, it wasn't. He got the phone call, then he filed the notice of appeal. You're right on that one. But no, there's nothing in the record that would indicate that an announcement had been made.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
And as far as the third-party complaint goes, the allegations that we didn't properly plead this is a classic example of when you bring in a third party. The statute that Mr. Denningberg quotes in his brief is 25-331, and it says you bring someone in who is or may be liable, and that takes in the hypothetical. That's why it was appropriate for us to bring him in as a cross-complaint, and my 5 minutes is up. If you don't have any further questions, I'll concede the rest of the time.
Thank you very much. Mr. Hassenjager? Good morning.
Justice. Court. Ed Hassen, represent Linda Clark. She's the plaintiff in the lower court case, and the appellee in this case. Here with my co-counsel, Howard Kyman, who's also involved in this case. In fact, I cite some examination Mr. Howard Kyman conducted with the manager of the bank regarding the location of the so-called lost account agreement.
If we get to the merits, if we get past jurisdiction, isn't there a question of fact buried within the depositions? about whether the bank manager did actually see the returned document? Isn't that enough to survive summary judgment?
Well, Your Honor, first, with respect to a lost document, there has to be clear and convincing evidence.
I'm not saying there's enough to prove it up at trial. I'm just asking, isn't there enough to survive summary judgment?
Is there enough in this case?
Yes.
I believe that in this case, the testimony of the bank manager, she was simply asked a question, the bank manager was asked a question by Mr. Kimon. You don't have any explanation then as to the whereabouts of this. And the bank manager says, that's correct. And she never gave any possibility of what happened to it. This is the bank officer that took the phone call. That's correct. Except that I don't know what happened to it. That's correct. So what happened to this certificate of deposit, we don't know. What happened to this account agreement that affects the certificate of deposit, we don't know. We even asked the bank officer himself who took the phone call, question, now that you couldn't find the signature card, would you assume that it was lost? Answer, no, I don't know what happened to it. But she's denying that it was even lost, and she's just simply saying, I don't know where it is. In any event, Your Honor, throughout her testimony, she answers with answers like, well, I believe this is what happened to it, or I think this is what I saw. I only glanced at it for a moment, so I couldn't really verify it was her signature, but yeah, it appeared to be hers.
Isn't that an assessment of credibility?
It is a question of, there is some credibility, sure.
Isn't that something for trial, not for summary judgment? Doesn't the summary judgment standard require the trial judge to view the evidence in the light most favorable to the non-moving party?
Yes, Your Honor, of course.
And unless you're going to, are you urging that deposition was uncredible, and that may not be the correct word, was discredited as a matter of law?
I think it was, Your Honor.
All right, that's your position.
Unless
it's that, do you agree, unless it rises to that level, there's enough there to survive summary judgment?
Yeah, is there a genuine issue of material fact? That's what you're asking.
Yeah, okay, thanks. I'm sorry.
What did the document do with regard to the change, allegedly do with regard to the change in the beneficiary of the certificate of deposit?
The account agreement that can't be located?
Right.
Yeah, and so the bank records simply show this, Your Honor. The phone call's made. The bank officer, in taking the phone call, is supposed to send out an account agreement for Hilda, the owner, to sign and then send back. She's then supposed to go ahead and scan that into their computer system, push a button, and show now to the bank, this is now payable on death to Mr. Graham. What the banker did in that case, during the phone call, she pushes the button. She tells the entire bank system, this is now payable on death to Mr. Graham without having received this document back. It's never scanned. The only document in the bank files with Hilda Graham's signature on it designating any kind of ownership to my client is an account agreement that she signed with my client in February of 2013, 5 months before.
Yeah, but didn't the bank officer also testify that at that time she generated the document, sent it to Hilda for signature?
She did testify to that, yes.
And then testified that she saw the document come back, but it disappeared.
She testified that something came back, it appeared to be Hilda's signature. I glanced at it for just a moment.
Okay, thank you.
And we're saying that's not clear and convincing evidence of the requirements made under Castellano. And even under the Uniform Commercial Code, it should be the same.
As a matter of law.
As a matter of law, that's right.
Thank you.
Last thing, Your Honor, the order entered by Judge Stratman, Mr. Denenberg, then...
You may complete your thought.
Mr. Denenberg then went ahead and filed a motion for new trial. You look at the document itself, it's kind of a mishmash of new trial and a request for alteration or amendment. Nevertheless, his conversation was with the bank or was with the judge's bailiff only, and he never took it up with the court. He never took it up with the judge. There was no announcement or ruling by the judge saying you don't get a hearing. He just simply said, I think he says this in his affidavit to this court, that, well, I'll just go ahead and appeal it then. That's it. So I say, Your Honor, there was a terminating motion there before the court when he filed this appeal to this court, which means this court now doesn't have jurisdiction.
Do you concede that if our record from the trial court contained a memorialization somehow of that conversation, that that would have been a sufficient announcement for purposes of the springing jurisdiction statute?
Your Honor, I think any kind of announcement would have to come from the court, from the judge herself. I can't tell you the mayor. Mr. Danaberg had a complaint with whether or not he should get a hearing in this matter. Should say, bailiff, let me talk to the judge. Also, and there's nothing like that. Nothing from the judge herself.
So do you have any authority for the proposition that the announcement has to come from the judge herself, or can it come from the judge's bailiff?
I don't have authority.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you very much. Is there time for rebuttal? There is no time for rebuttal. We will go on then to the